Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. I am Connor Dunning, filling in for the big man while he's out. I am now joined by David Cobb, college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on X and Twitter at David W. Cobb. Mr. David Cobb, you ready to argue about Zach Edey and Dalton Knecht? Do I have David Cobb?
Weird. You should.
Do I have David Cobb? We're going to work on getting David Cobb. In the meantime, I got to let the people know what Mr. David Cobb sent out over the weekend. Here's the tweet. Please tell me more about how any Grizzlies fan who liked Dalton Knecht at number 9 was just a delusional Tennessee fan who doesn't know basketball. That is what David Cobb put out there on social media this weekend. And as you can probably guess, Memphis Grizzlies fans took offense to it. And I understand why. I get what David Cobb is trying to say. He's trying to say, listen, if you wanted Dalton Knecht to be a Memphis Grizzly at number 9, some people yelled at you. They said, well, it's just because of Tennessee, this, that, and the other, which I get that angle. However, I would argue that the reason Dalton Knecht didn't make any sense for the Grizzlies at number 9 was they didn't need a wing. Cobb, you with me?
Yeah, what's up, man?
You ready to argue about Dalton Knecht?
Yeah, let's go.
I just read off your tweet. In case you forgot what you sent out, here's what you said. Please tell me more about how any Grizzlies fan who liked Dalton Knecht at number 9 was just a delusional Tennessee fan who doesn't know basketball. And I would say the Grizzlies fans had a pretty big reaction to that tweet.
Yeah, so did Tennessee fans. You know what, Connor? I was playing to both sides of my base there. Uh-huh. That's what I was doing. I was playing to my Tennessee base, my Memphis base, and then they started fighting with each other. They started fighting with me. I'm just sitting there, like, holding my baby, watching all these engagements and stuff. And it was wild. But let's just say the rookie of the year odds, man, don't they look a little different now? Don't they look a little different, Connor, than they did a couple weeks ago?
Well, Zach Edey's not playing, so, you know, invalid. Invalid. Doesn't count. They're not playing. But yeah, Dalton Knecht, he's been awesome. In the last 10 games, he's shooting 50% from three. Dalton Knecht's been awesome. And that's why the reason I wanted to talk to you about this was I don't think it's a Dalton Knecht versus Zach Edey conversation. I also don't think that the reason that Grizzlies fans, I think, had such a big reaction towards Tennessee fans on draft night and when it happened and then the preceding weeks was, you got to be honest with me here. Tennessee fans acted like Memphis as a city insulted the state of Tennessee because they didn't take Dalton Knecht. There are multiple people out of Knoxville that I have respect for that write and report on the Tennessee Volunteers basically said that Memphis took a pee on the state of Tennessee and slapped people in the face because they turned their back on the Tennessee Volunteers by selecting Zach Edey, who beat them in the NCAA tournament. I think that is the main reason people call Tennessee fans delusional about this whole situation, because when you actually look at Dalton Knecht, the player, he's awesome. Like, Dalton Knecht, I know Gabe and I, we are top three guys that we wanted them to go get a big, because we knew the Grizzlies needed a starting center. That's why Zach Edey ended up being drafted at number 9 by the Memphis Grizzlies. Donovan Klingon was the first choice, Zach Edey was the second choice, Ware was the third choice, and then I think Dalton Knecht would have been the fourth choice. And to be quite honest, if Zach Edey hadn't been drafted by the Grizzlies, if for some reason he wasn't there, I wouldn't have been shocked if they took Dalton Knecht. I just wouldn't have been.
Okay, so my problem, you know what, you're right. Like, there are plenty of delusional Tennessee fans, right? Like, I have...
It's the brand, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of them out there, but my problem is this idea now that we there's been so much effort. Maybe the Tennessee fans started it. All right, I'll even give you that.
All right.
But since then, it feels to me like there's this yearning for Dalton Kinect to be a bust. So we can say, ha-ha, we told you, we were right. There was no reason for the Grizzlies to even look at him. He's a scrub. He's going to be playing in Europe next year. And, bro, that is just not true. Like, he is the second-best rookie in the NBA right now behind Jared McCain, who, you know, we hadn't even included in this conversation because he's not necessarily relevant to Memphis, but he was number 16 overall. So it's a weird rookie class. And then, like, the idea that, you know, it's not – like, I didn't say anything about Zach Edey in my tweet. Like, he's been better than I thought he would be. He's looked like somebody who can help the Grizzlies.
But, right.
Like, the idea that they would have had no use for Dalton Kinect, because I heard you saying they didn't need a wing. And, like, that is true. But at the same time, whenever the draft had rolled around, they hadn't re-upped Luke Kennard yet. And so, you know, you could have passed on doing that. You could have saved yourself $9 million or whatever Luke Kennard is making. And then, like, Jake LaRavia is off the books after this year, too. And then, like, obviously, you got Vince Williams, you got Gigi Jackson, who we haven't really seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not act like those guys are proven vets. We saw encouraging flashes from those two.
Whoa.
In what was a lost season without Ja Morant, without Desmond Bane. What do those guys look like in a playoff race when Ja and Dez are also on the court? How do they adjust when they are not the focal points of the offense? Are they still the shining steals that we thought they were? I mean, I hope so. But the idea that you can't use a shooting wing in the NBA, you can never have enough shooting wings in the NBA. In fact, I think if Dalton Kinect were playing regular rotation minutes for the Grizzlies, given how free-flowing and electric their offense could be, I mean, he'd be putting up even bigger numbers for them than he is for the Lakers. So, because he wouldn't be sharing the touches with LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, look, it worked out, right? It worked out for both sides. Because Zach Edey is filling a role for the Grizzlies when healthy. Although I will say they are 6-1 since he got hurt, but that's beside the point.
Because they got job back. I think that's a little, let's be fair. That's because Ja Morant came back. That's why they're mostly 6-1.
I mean, that's true. Yeah, that's true. They're also 1-5 when he scores more than 12 points. But
relax.
That's beside the point.
Relax.
But anyway, no, it worked out well for everybody. Right?
Yeah, it worked out well.
The Grizzlies got what they needed from the draft. I don't think Jalen Wells is as good as Dalton Kinect, but he is really good for a second.
Well, he's also, what, 3 years younger?
I mean, who cares? Desmond Bane was like 31 when the Grizzlies drafted him.
What do you mean, who cares? I mean, that's the whole point. No, it's, listen, I get what you're saying, and you are correct. It's the Grizzlies right now, on December 2nd, have one of the better problems in the NBA. They have too many talented wings. They got too many talented wings. If you had asked me on draft night if I thought that was going to be a good problem for the Grizzlies to have this year, I would have told you no, because we didn't know that Jake LaRavia was going to turn around like he has. We did know that Jalen Wells was going to be who he has become. That is a big reason why I think the Dalton Kinect stuff, why I don't miss him necessarily, because you said, what would Dalton Kinect look like in the Grizzlies rotation? He'd look like Jalen Wells. And to be quite honest with you, listen, Dalton Kinect, better offensive player right now, I'll give you that. The defensive potential of Jalen Wells is very exciting. Now, Luke Kennard, he was signed without being signed. He was posting his baby on Instagram stories in Grizzlies gear. He was watching the summer league game. We knew that he was going to be a part of the Grizzlies rotation heading into the season. But I understand what you're saying. I think that the issue that Memphians took and Grizzlies fans took, it wasn't necessarily with people who were trying to argue that Dalton Kinect would be good on the Memphis Grizzlies, because it's silly to say he wouldn't be. He would absolutely be. When you watched him in college, when you watched him during summer league, when you watched him, you know, so far this season, he is an NBA player. And I've always thought it was silly for teams to pass up on guys because of their ages. Well, they played 4 years in college and were a really good player, but for some reason we think that that's going to be a negative for them in the NBA. And the Grizzlies do not subscribe to that. They've got Zach Edey, they have Desmond Bane, they have Brandon Clark, they have these guys who play a long time in college. And Dalton Kinect matched the type of blueprint of player that they want. It all comes down to role. It all comes down to team need. The Grizzlies needed a center. They needed a starting center. Zach Edey made the most sense for the Grizzlies. And Dalton Kinect fell to the Lakers. And I agree with LeBron. I agree with what everybody has said. It's crazy he fell to 17 just because of his age. Because when you watched him in college, it was so apparent that he was a bucket getter. And I will say, I just talked about Jalen Wells' defense. His defense has been better than expected so far. So I don't know how much of a bit higher ceiling Dalton Knecht has from the player he is now, but he's going to be so valuable for that Lakers team this season, because as we've seen with LeBron James, when you put shooters around him, you have success.
So it's crazy when you watch the Lakers. A lot of it is just getting the ball to either AD or LeBron in a favorable one-on-one situation.
Right.
But then really the only guy who they run a lot of actions for is Dalton Knecht.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's a lot of LeBron and AD sort of making things happen on their own. So that's interesting to watch. I think it worked out well for everybody. But I argue this, and it's just basically, let's not pretend like there's no scenario in which it could have worked, right? Because, you know, Oso Iguodaro was still there when they picked Jalen Wells, and he's been really effective as a rookie big for the Phoenix Suns as a second-round pick, right? So maybe, you get Knecht and Iguodaro, right? And you're sitting here feeling just as good about those two as you are about Zach Edey and Jalen Wells. So the idea that it's just
maybe.
It was absurd to even suggest that Dalton Knecht could fit in with the Grizzlies, that's what bothers me. And I think that's, whatever, it's rooted in this whole like Memphis versus Tennessee, Tennessee versus Memphis thing, which
because
of your history, you find yourself right in the middle of it. I don't know, it becomes a thing sometimes. Like my fists are quenched right now, Connor. You remember that, right? Penny Hardaway, saying the Tennessee guys were balling up their fists. You remember all that?
Oh yes, I trust me, I remember. I am in a fraternity from the University of Tennessee, so you better believe I get text messages from people every once in a while about Memphis and that rivalry going on. I'm in that weird spot where, because growing up in Memphis, you know, the age that I am, Memphis football was terrible until the last decade. Like, we are living through the golden age of Memphis football right now. And I would still argue it is happening, even though there has been a bit of a lull. They haven't made it back to the championship game in 5 years. Yes. I hear all of you screaming that at the radio right now. But Memphis football was terrible. I came from a Tennessee football family, so of course Tennessee football became my team, and then Memphis basketball was unbelievable when I was a kid. So of course they became my team, and they've stayed good and consistent, over the years.
You had a confused upbringing.
I will never forget the day that Memphis and Tennessee played 1-2 at the FedEx Forum at Carville Middle School. We had a spirit day where you had to wear Memphis gear, you had to wear Tennessee gear. I wore both. I had Memphis shorts and who was it? Oh my God. I can't remember who the play was. It Chisholm, maybe? I think I had his jersey on. So right. I was split phantom that entire time. But let's agree. I think that we can agree on this front. Dalton Knecht would have been good for the Memphis Grizzlies, but the fit of Zach Edey and the addition of Jalen Wells is pretty damn good. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It worked out fine for both sides. But maybe Dalton Knecht's shown us enough now to where we can quit trying to put him in the basket of being a bust.
Fair. I promise you, David Cobb, I will promise to never call Dalton Knecht a bust. I will never ever do that. I promise that. But before I let you go, because we have a little bit of a shorter segment today, because we got to get to DeMichael Cole from the Commercial Appeal to talk about the Grizzlies, I do want to ask you about Memphis basketball's performance down in Maui. You had a tweet that you sent out earlier that said quad 1-2 wins for Memphis, 4 quad 1-2 wins for the rest of the AAC. They have 2, and that is why it was so important for Memphis to go down in Maui and have a good performance, because as Penny Hardaway has said, and he's caught flack for it, but he's absolutely correct, the Memphis season is their non-con schedule.
100%, and it's not even done yet, because you got a couple of decent folks coming into your building this week with Louisiana Tech and Arkansas State, and then you get the Clemson, Virginia, Mississippi State, Ole Miss spurt as well. So the work is not done. The work has just begun. The rest of this month is huge. I was a little surprised to see Memphis only at 31 in the net today.
Yeah, that was surprising. Well, UConn didn't do them any favors. God. Win some basketball games.
UConn has not done them any favors, but if you go look, I still believe UConn's going to end up being pretty good because KenPom, which is heavily reliant on predictive metrics, has them as a top 25 team still. But I'll say this about the net: there's a lot of predictive stuff baked in there, so preseason bias is still playing a role in the net. So Memphis has to overcome a little bit of that from the computer metrics and all that. But I don't see how you can't be just overwhelmingly encouraged by the start. But yeah, it does. When you rattle off the statistics about how bad the rest of the AAC has been, it just brings it further into focus. how important it is that you keep racking up these quad one and quad two victories, and these you know, next several weeks are your chance to do that. So no, it's I mean, the Auburn loss is what it is. Auburn, I think, would have been, you know, they should be number one. They're number two behind Kansas in the AP poll. But I would have voted Auburn number one today. I mean, they beat Houston, Iowa State, and North Carolina. Auburn is the best team in college basketball right now. So there's no shame in taking that loss. And, yeah, I mean, it's been as good of a start as you could have hoped for Memphis.
Absolutely. And when you look at the rest of their conference, it gets really ugly after Memphis. Like, North Texas right now in the net is 59. Then you have Wichita State at 93. And then the rest of the conference is in the 100s, and they are ranked ninth overall as a conference in the net. So hopefully Penny Hardaway and the Memphis Tigers can continue to take care of business in their non-con schedule. But David Cobb, thanks so much for joining me, my friend.
Hey, no problem, man. Thanks.
Yes, sir. That was David Cobb from CBS Sports. You can find him on X, Twitter, doing tremendous work at David W. Cobb. When we come back, we'll have DeMichael Cole from the Commercial Appeal to talk about the Grizzlies and their six-game win streak. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn on 929 FM ESPN. Stick around. I am now joined by DeMichael Cole from the Commercial Appeal on Locked On Grizz. You can find him on Twitter at DeMichael C. DeMichael, what is up, man?
What's going on, God? How you doing?
Oh, nothing much. Just enjoying being able to enjoy Grizzlies basketball. Once again, they are on a six-game win streak. They are now third place in the West and leave the homestand undefeated. George and I talked about this in the open, but do you think that health has just been the biggest factor for why this team has really put it together the last few weeks?
It's a big part of it for sure, because you got the main pieces starting to come together. The schedule being kind of softer is a part of it too. But yeah, it's a combination of a bunch of those things. You know, you got the fact that John Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., they haven't been on the floor much together. And this stretch, like before this stretch, I think it was one game. So, but now you got those guys playing together, and they look good doing it. You know, Des is still finding his way offensively and whatnot. But yeah, the offense is coming along. They're leading the NBA in assists right now. We just saw they had a 36 assist game, only 10 turnovers. We've seen games like that in the past, but they're consistently kind of having these 30 assists nights right now. So I think, yeah, it's a combination of guys being healthier and in addition to the fact that they're getting better equipped to what this new offense should look like.
Absolutely. I think that you had the story a few weeks ago where you talked to a lot of the players, and most of them said, listen, we understand that there's been some ebbs and flow to this offense. We've had some games where it's really popped. We've had some games where they just haven't really been able to make a three. But stick with us, because we got to get our sea legs underneath us, because the pace of play is pretty wild. And I think that Jalen Wells was actually talking about it last night after the game, because the Indiana Pacers in that first quarter, you know, you were going up against a team that has been one of the leaders in the NBA with pace, and the Grizzlies had to adjust to their pace. But once they did that, they basically took the belt to the ass. Like, they have been absolutely whooping teams recently. And you talked about how Desmond Bane, John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. haven't really played much together. They have only played 63 total minutes together. 63 total minutes together this season. And the Grizzlies are third place right now in the Western Conference. And when they are on the floor together, the Grizzlies are outscoring their opponents by 29 points per 100 possessions in those minutes. But I think the biggest factor for why they've been able to dominate with the trio in there has been the play of Jaren Jackson Jr. We talked about it a lot over the offseason. We talked about it a lot during last season. But even though last year was some of the darkest days we've ever seen for the Memphis Grizzlies, Jaren Jackson Jr. really took a leap, especially on the offensive end.
Yeah, right now he's an all-star. He's all NBA. He's all that good stuff right now. I mean, the production is there in sub 30-minute increments right now. And it's not even just that. It's he's staying out of foul trouble, which some of us never thought we'd see that happen. But he's staying out of foul trouble. You know, the rebounding numbers still aren't great, but guess what? The Grizzlies are still one of the best rebounding teams in the NBA. So it's not like, you know, he's kind of hampering them on that end in any way. They're still a terrific rebounding team. Then when you factor in the defense, right, over a steal per game, over a block, you know, per game, the defensive rating when he's on the floor, he's been exceptional. But, yeah, going back to what you just said, Connor, when you talk about what last year meant for this team, it was a good individual a year for certain players. Basically, the team stuff was terrible, right? 27-55 record.
Right.
Everything that they typically good at, they were bad at, and, you know, you're just ready for it to be over. But for guys like G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams, and specifically Jaren Jackson Jr., he played out of double teams, triple teams. He saw every defensive look you can imagine. And now when I'm listening to him talk, he just talks the game so much, you know, more, I guess, from a detailed standpoint of how defenses are trying to attack him. He's prepared for anything now because last season prepared him. So if you were watching yesterday's game, there was that one play where the guy was trailing behind him as he was dribbling up the floor, and it was looking like the guy was going to take the ball from him, and he was right on Jaren's back. And then there was a guy in front of Jaren as he crossed, you know, half court, crossed the three-point line, and Jaren does a spin move on the guy in front of him, and he basically spins into, you know, the guy who was trailing behind him, but the guy behind him still couldn't rip the ball loose. He spins, and then it's a wide-open dunk. And he was talking about that play, and he gave a really good answer into the insight of what he saw there, and basically talked about how defenses are shifting a certain way when he has the ball. They shift. I think he was saying they were shifting to the right, and the guy kind of so he kind of was setting up that defender so he could get the so he can get to the spin move and create that open space for himself. So it's basically what we're seeing is, it's not just the physical dominance that he's presenting. He is a brilliant mind, and he's talked to me a lot this year just about counters, right? If when they try to take away him going over the right shoulder, being able to attack efficiently to the left shoulder, getting to the floater, the pull-up three-point shot, because teams are kind of loading up in the paint for him to drive the ball. So he has to have that pull-up three-pointer because it's going to be open. So basically having that shot and then making having a counter to that for when they pump, when they drive, when they close out, he pump fakes, gets to the basket. So what we're seeing is Jaren kind of becoming a more brilliant offensive mind.
Absolutely. I think he has become the Grizzlies' ultimate cheat code. You know what I mean? He is able to score at all three levels, and he can just do things that big men are not supposed to be able to do. Last year, I think he was at the very top of the list. He may have led the NBA in ISO scoring, and I knew that that development last year was going to translate into a lot of wins for the Memphis Grizzlies this year, because I think one thing it has done, it has taken that scoring load, that responsibility off of Ja Morant. And what you've been able to see on the offensive end now is Ja's able to get other guys involved. He's able to, you know, move that ball around because he knows that at the end of the day, if they need a bucket at the end of the shot clock, if you throw it to Jaren Jackson Jr., no matter who's defending him at this point, it's going to be a mismatch. I also think that it's been important that Jaren kind of looked around at everybody this year and said, oh, I'm one of the biggest guys out here. And he has been going through people's chest. And to your point, he can knock down a three. He's shooting 34% from three this year. I know he's had a bit of a difficulty knocking down threes the last few games, but he can still hit one when you need him to. It's that little baby floater that he has in the lane now that feels automatic. It feels almost like, I don't know if you were here during it, but I know that you followed the team. Remember when Bano used to take that little turnaround jumper right at the free throw line, and you just knew that was going in? That, to me, has become so valuable for Jaren Jackson Jr. because, like you said, he's able to adjust on the fly, and he knows that if I have a smaller defender on me, I'm just going to go up and put that little baby hook in because nobody can block it.
Yeah, he has one of the best conversion rates on floaters in the NBA right now, and it's left hand, it's right hand. However you want it, you know, he can do it. He's definitely making it happen with that part of his game. But, yeah, physically, he's become so much more imposing. You know, I remember I wasn't covering the team then, but I remember in his earlier years, you know, people were saying, oh, you know, he isn't, you know, taking advantage, you know, of his physical gifts as much. You know, borderline basically called him soft, you know, in so many words. But, you know, since I've been here, you've seen the gradual growth year by year. I think 2 years ago, it was just flashes of games where he was like, yeah, these dudes can't guard me. And then last season, it was, I got to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you have a combination of, I can be the guy, and I know these guys can't guard me. And, yeah, you mentioned the fact, that his isolation scoring was near the top of the NBA last season. And the funny thing is, if you go to the previous 2 years, he always graded out as one of the better isolation scorers. He just wasn't, there wasn't a high volume.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in each year that I've been here, Jaren has been the one player, and John Morant has not graded out as an above average, league average isolation scorer. Desmond Bain has been well below league average in that regard. Jaren Jackson Jr. has been elite. 2022, 2023, both years elite. Last year, as you mentioned, elite again. So far this season, he's been elite. But the difference this season and last season, the way, is the volume is up. So now this is why you're seeing the production is really good. I mean, if he was playing minutes like some of these other guys, I think the league would really be catching, you know, much more wind of what we're seeing in Memphis.
Absolutely. And speaking of those minutes, it is pretty impressive that this team is doing all of this with basically none of their best players breaking 30 minutes per game. And I understand that there are a lot of frustrations about that out there this season, especially in the early season when they were dropping a few games that you think that they may have been able to win if these guys were playing 30 minutes or so. But the longer we go on in the season, you're starting to see it pay off because they are able to go in these late game situations. They're able to keep this pace of play up a little bit more. And I've been saying it all year. Just listen to the players. Listen to the players. I understand the frustrations, but if they are bought into this new offense, they are bought in to the rotation as it sits now, because they keep talking about every time they're asked about it, wait till January. These minutes are going to go up for the better players, and they're still going to be able to run, and these other teams aren't going to be able to keep up with them. Because it has felt like this season that the Grizzlies are just wearing teams down because they can't keep up with that pace of play. And then when you throw a speedster like John Moran into it, when he's having the most assists he's ever had per game in an NBA season so far this year, it's really difficult to stop the Memphis Grizzlies. But real quick, I want to stay on Jaren Jackson Jr. because there's been a lot of discussion about Defensive Player of the Year, All-NBA. I understand that if he wins All-NBA, it's going to cost, or gets on the All-NBA team, it'll cost the Memphis Grizzlies about $300 million. Do you think that the team is going to have to begin operating some moves during the season to get ready for that potential big paycheck heading towards Jaren Jackson Jr., or is it far too early to even talk about that?
I mean, you don't have to do it in season. It could be an off season thing.
No,
too,
for sure. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, yeah, the answer is yeah. Like, they're going to have to, you know, make some moves. And I mean, the good thing is they're in a very fortunate position where that's fine. You know, I mean, they're playing 11 guys right now, and you could make a strong argument that the three guys that they're missing should be rotation players.
Right.
Like, Zach Edey, you can make an argument that he, when he gets back, he should even be a starter, potentially. You can make an argument that Vince Williams, you know, based off what we saw last season, deserves to be in a rotation when he gets back. G.G. Jackson, same thing. You can make an argument for any of those three guys. So the depth is just, you know, stupendous right now. Like, hey, they just got loads and loads of depth, which means you have the ability to unload on, you know, a couple contracts here and there, and not really, you know, instead you'll lose a little bit of depth, but at the end of the day, you would hope that you don't experience, you know, the wave of injuries that this team has, where you really got to rely on that depth to the level that they have had to, you know, over the last, you know, 2 months to start this season. So, Jaren Jackson, like I said, he's playing at an All-NBA level. If he makes an All-NBA team, that's going to be, like you said, upwards of a $300 million potential contract there. It doesn't have to be that. You know, it's just that option will be there for him to say, hey, I want the maximum amount I can get. And, you know, the Grizzlies want to keep him, which, of course, you know, you'll have to keep Jaren Jackson Jr. You know, that'll be something that is have to, you know, that they'll have to kind of, you know, get ready to gear up for. So you have a bunch of contracts that are, you know, middle tier movable deals. So, yeah, I think you can kind of prepare for the idea that a lot of those middle of the pack contracts, in a way, you've started to see some of that, you know, some of those dominoes fall. You know, Jake LaRavia,
yep,
his
exactly.
option didn't get picked up before the season. Santi Aldama did not receive a contract extension. And now both of those players are playing so good, you're like, should they have done that?
Right.
And I still say they made the right decision,
mm-hmm.
because you have an overflow here, and what you're going to have is the roster is so crowded because you still remember they extended John Conchar now. Should that have happened? You know, yeah, whatever. But it's done. So they extended John Conchar. You're in a position where, at this point, if you have a first round pick and a couple second rounders or whatever next year, like where are you even going to roster these dudes? So it's definitely something that they have to address, and it will be.
Yeah, and, you know, this was before talking about the contracts not getting picked up and even the Luke Kennard one-year deal, him coming back. That was before Jalen Wells really hit the scene. It was before we realized, oh, this guy's a bona fide NBA player that they found in the second round. So, yeah, to your point, the Grizzlies all of a sudden have one of the better problems to have in the NBA where you have too much talent. You don't have enough spots. You don't have enough minutes. So it's going to be interesting to see how they dole those minutes out when everybody comes back, when Vince comes back, when Zach Edey comes back, when G.G. Jackson comes back. I think so far the obvious choices would be you would see, you know, Huff, he'll probably lose his minutes when Zach Edey comes back. I think that you'll see Luke Kennard's minutes go down a little bit. And I do think even though he's playing the best basketball of his career, I do think that you'll see Jake LaRavia's minutes come down a little bit because they have got to see what happens when you have a scoring threat like G.G. Jackson out there. You've got to see what happens when you have a defensive menace in Vince Williams Jr. out there. And Zach Edey, you didn't draft him at number 9 and have him start the season as your starting center for him just to waste away on the bench. So I think that you're going to see him get some more minutes too. But real quick, I do, before I let you go, want to ask you about Jalen Wells and Marcus Smart and the flip that they have made. All of a sudden, you're seeing Marcus Smart begin to almost thrive in that six-man role. And I think that when the Grizzlies initially traded for Marcus Smart a few years ago, the idea was, okay, they'll do a small ball lineup. He'll be their third guy. He'll be the small forward position. But as the years have gone on, and especially this season with the rise of Jalen Wells, and then you have Vince Williams Jr. coming back soon, it does seem like that Marcus Smart on this team fits best as a six man. Come in, be a defensive menace. He's not shooting the ball too much. He and Jalen Wells, over the last few games, are actually shooting 68.1% from the field with an effective field goal percentage. Right. So this little duo of Jalen Wells starting and Marcus Smart off the bench has seemingly unlocked something in Marcus Smart.
Yeah, it definitely has. I think I don't know if unlocked I feel like it's unlocked more for the team than it has for Marcus Smart.
Sure, sure.
I've been of the opinion that with Marcus Smart, like, it just hasn't been enough time. Like, oh, we're so instant gratification. Like, he played 20 games last year.
Right.
And he played, what, like, 8 games before he got hurt the first time. Then he comes back, and then he plays a few games, you know, with John Morant and, you know, like, those guys. And then he gets hurt shooting, making a three-pointer. So, like, we didn't see a huge sample size of what Marcus Smart could bring to the table and him kind of, you know, being accustomed to playing alongside these guys. And still, even this season, we still haven't seen a huge sample size of it. But I think over the last 3 games, you got people becoming more forgiving of, like, some of the previous things they said of him because you're starting to see some of the best parts of Marcus, whereas in the past we've seen probably some of the worst with the inefficient shooting, the turnovers, and you know, just some bad shot selection. But now you're seeing him make some of those shots. He's like, oh, that's why he takes those shots, because he's capable of making them. But with all that being said, yeah, with him coming off the bench, the way that I like to think of it is it just gives them more lineup balance.
Right.
You put Jalen Wells in the starting lineup. And I've been a Vince Williams guy. I feel like Vince Williams, but, you know, Vince Williams injuries and all that. So Jalen Wells makes a lot of sense to me because he's 6'7". And now instead of you saying, hey, Marcus Smart, we got Kevin Durant tonight. Go guard the 6'9 guy. You throw Jalen Wells, who, you know, isn't 6'9", he's 6'7", but he has long arms. Like, it's just a more suitable matchup. Then on top of that, you got the shooting aspect. Jalen Wells shooting the ball terrific from three-point range. Now you got John Morant being flanked by 2 above-league average three-point shooters in Desmond Bane and Jalen Wells. You go to any part of John Morant's career, that has never happened.
Mm-hmm.
That has never consistently been the case. A game or two here probably, but that has never consistently been the case where John Morant can drive the ball on one corner is Desmond Bane and the other corner is Jalen Wells. It's never been the case. So it opens up a whole new avenue of John Morant's game that we really haven't seen because teams aren't trying to leave Jalen Wells or Desmond Bane open. You got to give attention to Jaren Jackson Jr. You leave him open, he'll either take the tray ball or he's going to drive, and you don't want Jaren Jackson Jr. coming downhill. So you know, there's kind of just a whole domino effect with this decision. And then there's still right now, which I like, they got him in the closing lineups, and he's closing halves. So mm-hmm. he's closing at the end of the second quarter. He's in the closing lineup to end the game. The closing lineups, I mean, the games have been blowouts as of late, so we haven't really, you know, got a big sample size of it. But the last two closing lineups, I mean, the last two games we've seen little glimpses of the closing lineup, and it's been, you know, Ja, Dez, and Jaren, and then you got Santi Aldama and Marcus Smart as the other two. And I like that. You know, it's a lineup. It's very, you know, you can switch a lot because that's what you're doing, right, in the closing minutes. Teams are pretty much slowing the game down. They're trying to pick on mismatches and things like that. And that's where Marcus Smart's experience comes into play
right.
more than any other part of the game. So I feel like you're getting the best of both worlds, whereas you don't have them in the starting lineup. So you have more lineup balance. You have players that are more, I guess, just better lineup balance around John Morant with more shooting. That was my one big issue with this team. Like, you don't have enough shooting. But now it seems like they're starting to slowly get into the direction where they have better shooting. And that's why I think Marcus Smart is starting to unlock another level to this team right now.
Absolutely. And I think one big factor, too, is he's bought into the role. You know, he talked about it and he said, I want to do what's best for this basketball team. And that's why you talked about instant gratification right there. And mm-hmm. that is so true. It is the biggest obstacle that I think fan bases have to get over is you have to have patience in the NBA. This is a long season. I talk about it all the time, but Brevin Knight a few years ago when I first started in this industry told me, wait 15 to 20 games. That's your sample size. I know that's a long time, but 15 to 20 games tells you when something is real. So we'll have to wait to see the sample size of Marcus Smart coming off the bench. But I think that early results of him buying into it bode well for the Grizzlies. And I've just been one where I know a lot of people like to throw him into trades, and that's where the instant gratification comes in. Well, you can trade for Cam Johnson. Well, you can trade for Mikael Bridges, this, that, and the other. I would like to see Marcus Smart on this team in the playoffs because, in my opinion, having a scrappy veteran that is bought into his role, especially if it's on the defensive end, leads to playoff wins eventually. It leads to playoff wins. And you can already see his impact, I think, on these perimeter players. Look at Ja Morant, arguably having the best defensive season of his career. Does that happen if Marcus Smart isn't on this team? I don't know. I think that veteran leadership is going to be so important for this team moving forward. So I hope to see him stick on the Memphis Grizzlies for a while longer. I would love to see Marcus Smart play a playoff game at the FedEx Forum. I just think it's going to be electric. Because we've already seen it happen this year. That Pistons game, great example. Nobody had it. Nobody had it in that game. It was basically him and Santi Aldama because the funniest trend of the season is Santi turning into prime Dirk Nowitzki when nobody has it. All of a sudden, he just can't miss. Marcus Smart turned around that Pistons game by himself. By himself. So his presence is going to be so important for this Memphis Grizzlies team moving forward. But DeMichael, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up with you, man. Thanks so much for jumping on with me.
All right. Take care.
Yes, sir. That was DeMichael Cole from the Commercial Appeal and Locked On Grizz. You can find him on Twitter at DeMichaelC. We will be back next with The Blitz. Stick around. You listen to Connor Dunning on 929 FM ESPN.
And as always, The Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. We're up against it. DeMichael Cole was awesome, so decided to go a little bit longer with him. All I got to say about The Blitz today, last night, Josh Allen, one of a classic snow game performance. The Buffalo Bills took care of business, beat the 49ers 35-10. The season of hell for the 49ers continues. Christian McCaffrey is out for the rest of the season with a PCL injury. They now basically have no running backs. They lost a ton of guys to injury today as well. More guys to injury today. The biggest story from last night, though, Josh Allen, I think he's locked up MVP right now, unless he gets hurt. In my opinion, it is Josh Allen and then everybody else. George, what say you?
I've got to agree on Josh Allen really taking a commanding lead right now. You could make an argument there based on, you know, just the counting stats, but you watch those games and you watch it, and he is truly the most valuable player on that team. We could argue Saquon Barkley, but
I think that Saquon Barkley has a really good argument for it. Unfortunately, in this day and age of football, the MVP goes to a quarterback. I don't make that call. I think Saquon Barkley has a good chance to win Offensive Player of the Year. He's been unbelievable. I would have him second right now in the MVP race, but last night, Josh Allen locked it up for me. The Buffalo Bills are absolutely rolling. They're 10-2, and it was one of the best snow game performances I've seen in a very long time. Him, that lateral play, 10 out of 10.
Mind-boggling.
10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. But that's going to be it today for the Gabe Kuhn Show. I want to thank Harold Grader, David Cobb, and DeMichael Cole for joining the show. And as always, thank you to King George. We'll be back tomorrow with more, but coming up next, we're going to pass you off to Amber and Ian. Peace.